Hare Krishna. Reading from My Glorious Master, Hong Kong, 1974, Part 2. Go and live in Vrindavan. In Prabhupada's room was a double canopied bed with lace frills and a silk cover. But for all its opulence, the room was cold. Prabhupada asked me to find a heater, but the heater I found was weak, and I was left hoping its feeble warmth would spread. He then asked me to ready his bed for his rest. I carefully folded the silk bedspread and turned the covers back. Looking at the huge canopy bed, the little portion I had prepared for Prabhupada seemed so small. Prabhupada had called for Jagatarini and me to offer some intimate association, to offer us some intimate association. We spoke for a while, and then he said, after you have been preaching for 10 years, you can go and live in Vrindavan. My comment. Prabhupada usually rested at 10 p.m. and awoke at midnight to translate. Sleeping on an opulent bed neither increased Prabhupada's sleep nor stimulated his desire for enjoyment. He remained fixed in transcendence. For example, the day he arrived in Hong Kong, Prabhupada's plane landed at 7:30 p.m. He arrived at the hotel by 8:30 p.m., held kirtan and spoke to guests. Then he preached to me until about 1 in the morning before he finally rested. The rigors of continuous travel, soft beds, old age, an infirm body, and jet lag did not seem to affect Prabhupada. He rose around 2 a.m. to translate even when he went to bed at midnight. Quote, after you have been preaching for 10 years, you can go and live in Vrindavan. I had forgotten Prabhupada's words until I was already living in Vrindavan. The timing of Prabhupada's blessing was exact. Prabhupada said this to us in 1974. I had already been preaching in Japan and Hong Kong for just over 4 years. I later headed up a Gurukul at Gitanagari from 1976 to 1982. The Orient, January 1970 to April 1974, 52 months. Gurukula, August 1976, December 1982, 76 months. Total 128 months, or 10 years, 8 months. I arrived at the shelter of Krishna Balaram Mandir in 1983. And I now understand that my coming to Vrindavan was Srimati Radharani's fulfillment of Prabhupada's blessing. The correct side for sitting. We had heard that Prabhupada sometimes liked to sit in a rocking chair. So we bought a cane rocker and tied it to a red Chinese silk cushion and tied to it. Chinese silk cushion finely embroidered with colored flowers. Prabhupada liked to sit on the chair, but before sitting, he would turn the cushion over to the unembroidered side. We would turn it back over to the decorated side, but Prabhupada clearly wanted to sit on the unembroidered side and would again turn the cushion over. My comment. I don't really know why Prabhupada preferred the unembroidered side. Perhaps he was expressing his lack of appreciation for Chinese artistry or his preference for simplicity. Or he may have been indicating that we shouldn't be enamored by the superficial niceties of Chinese culture. Shivering from cold on the peak. Prabhupada's morning walk was on the peak, a high hill in Hong Kong. It is like Darjeeling, he said. The foggy morning air and brisk wind were chilling, and I feared Prabhupada would become ill. Should we go back, Prabhupada? Are you cold? No. And you? He was cold, and I was sure of it, but he kept walking. I shivered and told him I was cold. He replied, oh, then let us turn back immediately. Prabhupada allowed me a glimpse into his heart. The peak was cold and his coat was thin. For his own reasons, however, Prabhupada declined to turn back. As soon as he thought I was inconvenienced by the cold, however, he immediately wanted to return. Through this simple gesture, Prabhupada indicated that a gentleman's acts are determined by the needs of others. A dog on the peak. We returned to again walk on the peak, with its lush green foliage and varieties of evergreen and deciduous trees. The view of Hong Kong and its harbor below, not yet awake to its passionate grinding workday, was incredible. As our small group of five walked beside Prabhupada on the paved footpath, we saw a Chinese man with his large German shepherd. The dog was not on a leash, and it suddenly bounded playfully towards us. The dog's master stood at a distance and called him back, but the dog seemed intent on smelling us and pawing our clothes. The Chinese man, still at a distance, dropped down on his knees and began clapping and calling the dog, "Come on, boy, come on, come on, come, come." The dog finally left us and returned to his master. The man was jubilant. He affectionately patted the dog and repeated over and over, "Good boy, good boy, good, good." The dog slobbered, licked the man's hand, and pawed his chest. "Good boy, good boy." Prabhupada's demeanor was serious as he watched the scene. Finally, he turned to me, intoned and incredulous, "Good," and quickly resumed walking. My comment. Prabhupada didn't say anything about a human wasting his affection on a dog. "Good, good," was all we heard. Prabhupada's point seemed as clear, however, as if he had written a book. The concept of good in Kali Yuga was degraded to the level of doghood. Gone is the concept that good means austerity, cleanliness, truthfulness, mercifulness, and God consciousness. Now in Kali Yuga, an ordinary, slobbering, lowly dog is considered good. How fallen is contemporary civilization? Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami defines eloquence as truth spoken concisely. How eloquently Prabhupada summarized Kali Yuga's devolution in that one incredulous good. At a later time, I also heard Prabhupada's concisely expressed truth in Melbourne in 1975. As Prabhupada took his massage, I related to him elements from an exchange I'd had with a Christian. "Prabhupada," I began, "a Christian man I spoke to, he defended meat eating by quoting a Bible verse that said, 'It is not what goes into a man's mouth that degrades him, it is the words that come out.'" Prabhupada's six-word reply was truly eloquent. Quote, "You mean if you eat stool?" Okay. Hare Krishna. We shall end here. Hare Krishna.